With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem-solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
Ghost. Welcome to the Game of Thrones talk.
You just start off with Ghost.
Yeah.
We're just going to
the dire wolf.
We're going to dive right
can,
in on
can
Ghost.
We dive right in?
Yeah.
Okay. I don't read the books.
Okay.
Let's. When we get into Game of Thrones talk, I have never read any of the books.
Oh, okay.
And you have, right?
I have, and I do want to say this. Reading the books for Game of Thrones is not like, if any of you out there are Lord of the Rings fans and you tried to read the books, you're like, I can't get into this. Trust me, I had to slog through them. Lord of the Rings fans, you can come out my ass, because I didn't want to hear any more about Tom Bombadil and his cheese wheels. I was so done with Tolkien's writing style by the time I had read Lord of the Rings. But Game of Thrones reads, they're awesome. They are like books you can't put down.
So let's start off. This past week was kind of for me, I was dreading it, because this kind of proved people who were contractors of the last two episodes right. It was the episode where, okay, we got the goodbye episode, we got the fight, and now we have the recovery episode, and how are we going to be able to, you know, how are we going to be able to tell all these stories, tie up all these loose ends?
Right.
So let's start off with the ghost. The direwolf.
Right.
Who was not a major player in this series, really whatsoever, unless it was convenient to save someone. What was his role in the book that has everybody upset? Or is it just that he's a wolf and people love animals?
It's more that, and I'm gonna butcher this a little bit because it's been a while since I've read the last book, but in my defense, it came out in like fucking 2002 or something at this point. The dire wolves in the book, Ghost's role is still pretty minimal, so I'm pretty sure people are getting upset about just you left the animal behind and you didn't pet it. But here's a realistic answer to this. Like, whether you want to like it or not, I'm going to touch on this theme several times tonight. Like, they didn't have Jon pet Ghost because that's a lot of money, time, effort, and editing spent.
So you're okay with that?
Yeah,
with that reasoning.
I actually kind of, I like the heartbreaking dismissal. Like, look, if any of you have owned a pet, you know how obsessed you get, especially with dogs. Like, dogs have a way of pulling on your heartstrings. And if you've ever had to let a dog go or give a dog away or, God forbid, you know, have an animal put down, it's a horrible thing. So maybe that worked best for John, just to be like, look, man, I just got to go before this gets emotional, right?
Yeah.
So I'm okay with it. But if you want to know the logistical reason for why they couldn't do it, that's just going to be a lot of fucking editing time spent on it. And before you come at me with, oh, well, the season hasn't been good anyway, first off, kiss my ass. But second off, I'm sorry, that's just the reality of doing a show. And as the show went along, they realized that Ghost's role in the way they wanted it in the show was very inconsequential. So
it really is, right? I mean, he was very inconsequential for four or five seasons, it felt like.
Right.
I mean, there was those smack dab, those seasons in the middle of the show where he never showed up. And then he only showed up in, like, I don't know, season five, I think he came in out of nowhere, and everybody like was very surprised by it.
Yeah,
but his role to the whole series was manufactured by the audience who loves animals. And let me bring this up is because I watch Veep, and Veep is in its final season.
Love Veep.
And there is a scene. It's kind of a spoiler. It's not a spoiler, but she, at some point during her lead into this season, has bombed an Osama bin Laden compound, but it was the day of a wedding, right?
Right, right.
So she bombed it during the day of the wedding. It gets out, and they're all freaking out. Well, we'll never win the election because this got out. And then it turns out that the American people were all right because it killed a bunch of terrorists, right? They don't care about a wedding. They killed a bunch of terrorists. Well, then Mike McClintock, who is now progressed to TMZ level whatever, he's a TMZ host, accidentally, without his real knowledge, shows a clip, and he asks, what is this right here? And Selena goes, it's an elephant. And then they just show the elephant getting bombed and getting bombed. And then later she lands on American soil after this whole thing, and she cannot understand why all these people hate her. It's because she killed the elephant.
She killed
the
elephant.
It doesn't matter about the people. And that's what the society is. This society, for whatever reason, this Twitter millennial society, cares more about animals, more about plants than it does about fellow humans. And this just goes to show this is faux outrage about a fucking dire wolf that has not mattered for the majority of the storylines in this series.
But and that's where, and you are definitely on the right path, and I completely agree with what you're saying, and I'll even add to it more to this by saying that I think it leads more credence to my, it's not even a theory, I'm just going to list it as fact, is that people take show theories so far that they turn it into their reality. And when the show doesn't pan out that way, they're mad at a show for a premise that the show never promised them.
Right.
There's nothing in the show that ever promised you that Ghost was going to have a presence larger than what he already had. And even if, what is that presence going to be?
He's still alive. What more do you want?
He's alive. And all he can do is rip people's throats out and be a dog.
Yeah.
An abnormally large dog, but he's still just a dog. He's not going to sit on the Iron Throne. He's not going to make you fucking breakfast. He's just a dog.
So you're saying he's not Hot Pie? Because Hot Pie can do both of those things.
He is not Hot Pie. And Hot Pie is my dark horse to sit on the Iron Throne. I'm going to keep saying until the show ends. But I want to pivot to Jaime Lannister. Because my argument I just made for Ghost rolls right in to what people are going apeshit about Jaime Lannister.
Do you? Here's my thing about the whole Jaime Lannister, Brienne, Tormund thing. They survived, all right? I was so excited that those three survived because I was hoping for Jaime Lannister redemption. I was hoping for Tormund and Ser Brienne to get it on, right?
Right.
I mean, that was my big thing. Like, if I'm rooting for some people to get happy, this is my problem with the episode, and I don't. People who want storylines that make sense and people who want character development and complained about the last two episodes and how they didn't make sense. This episode made zero sense. Take out the Starbucks coffee thing. Brienne is reduced to a sniveling, typical woman in a fantasy novel, in any kind of novel, in almost a romantic comedy thing by Jaime. Her and Jaime should never hooked up. This her and Jaime thing should never been a thing.
I don't know. I kind of disagree a little bit.
Well, I mean, here she is. She's crying.
I'm not disagreeing with what you're saying about
if she would have stayed strong and maybe stabbed Jaime before he got on that horse and said, hey, no, motherfucker, you're staying with me, like Tormund probably would have to Brienne, like just stabbed him. And then just dragged him with a knife by his calf. That I could get behind. I could get behind that relationship. But the fact that Jaime sought her out and then convinced her to, I mean, I don't think I really took away what, now that I'm saying it out loud, I don't really think I took away in the initial viewing what I was supposed to. And that's Jaime Lannister was just a piece of shit. I'm saying it out loud now, and I feel like he's just a piece of shit who has misguided moral values.
Okay, but he admits that in the show.
Yeah.
He even says as much, but
I know he said it, and I don't think at the time I really just, I was so infuriated by how they portrayed Brienne and how Tormund just got the peace, see you later. I mean, to me, that's the more egregious goodbye than the fucking direwolf.
But okay, so let me ask this before I get into the whole Jaime Lannister thing. Do you believe that he left to try to go hook up with his sister, or do you think he left because he realized he's the only one to get close to his sister and possibly end this whole fucking thing?
I think it's because he loves his sister. Until this point, I hadn't even thought of it. Until we were hashing it out, and I was just talking about what Jaime has done, I really didn't even give a shit about Jaime anymore because he, and maybe that's what the writers wanted. Maybe they wanted us just to hate him And maybe he still has a redemption story to tell. But I really think that I think he's a piece of shit. I think he just loves his sister wife.
I think he's a piece of shit.
Yeah.
I think his redemption arc is almost complete. Because I really do think that he's going to King's. I think the moment that Sansa made the comment to him in the courtyard about, you know, I really wanted to see your sister pay for this, or however she put it. I think that moment of realization was that not him like, oh, I've got a way to get out of here. It was, this is not going to go well for them in King's Landing, them being Jon and Dany and all that.
Well, it's because they're fucking idiots, and we can get to that later.
They're idiots, we're definitely
going to
get to that. But this is not going to go well for them. I'm the only one I think that can get close to Cersei, and however this works, I think I'm going to have to take her out. I'm going to die in the process. I know that, but I'm going to have to be the one that either talks sense into her, or if that doesn't work, I'm going to have to take her ass out. But I will say this, and again, I got to go back to people's theories and all this kind of stuff. The way I don't know that I necessarily agree that Brienne was a complete idiot, only because her and Jaime spent a lot of time together, and that I think he actually does feel affection for her and possibly even love for her, but he knows that realistically that's not a life or a lifestyle he could live with. I mean, he was sleeping with his own sister. He threw a kid out the window to keep sleeping with his own sister. Like, he knows that he's got demons there. And let's say that everything goes perfectly. 10 years down the road, he's still with Brienne. Now all of a sudden the world's got peace in it, and he's probably going to start being a dick again, right?
Yeah.
And I think he knows this. Maybe I'm reading into it too far.
That's fair.
But here's the problem I've got with people on Twitter, is that a lot of people on Twitter, a lot of listeners, are going into this whole thing that it was a bunch of male writers that don't know how to write a female character. And so, you know, that's exactly what's happening here.
Women are getting less screen time. That's kind of how I felt walking away from it. And I'm not one of those people who automatically thinks that. But I've kind of felt that her character got reduced in those final moments. I only think it was the moment where he's getting on the horse. I don't think it's anything other than that moment.
Well, I think the reason why he says that before he gets on the horse is to give her some finality that, like, you're not talking me out of going down there. I've got to say something shocking to make you understand there's no reason to follow me down there. Because we've seen how her loyalty is over the course of the show. It's like total. When she gives you loyalty, she doesn't stick by your side. Aggressively so, like to the point where you're not going to be able to get rid of her. Like when she first meets up and is trying to find Sansa and find Arya and all that, because she absolutely refuses to leave anybody's side who has any kind of information about them. Once she discovers them, she doesn't want to leave their side, the whole thing, right? So if Jaime just looks at her and says, I think I'm the only one who's got to go to King's Landing and deal with my sister, what's Brienne going to do? Either don't leave me or I'm coming with you, right?
Yeah.
But if he looks at her and says, you know what? Like, you were just a one-night stand. I don't have any love for you. I obviously have been sleeping with my sister. I threw a kid out the window. Like, I'm not who you think I am. While those things are true, I think it's also the shock value for him to be like, this is a clean cut. You need to stay here where you're not going to get killed because I got to go deal with something.
So where does this leave the... I think... Another part that lays into my anger, or that is part of my anger, is where does this leave the storyline for Brienne and all? I mean, where does she go from here? Is she just done?
I think she's show-wise, I think she's done. I think the only true path she has left is just she's going to be there to help protect whoever is running Winterfell. She's going to get 15 seconds of screen time in the very last episode for the wrap-up, and then that's really going to be it. And again, I'll say this, we're going to move on to another part of the show, but the whole thing, people are getting all upset about, it should have been Tormund that hooked up with her. Okay, realistically though, let's walk through this.
I didn't know that she was a virgin. I mean, you could kind of guess that she was a virgin, but I mean, if I'm going to lose my virginity to someone, it's going to be someone wild. I mean, right? I mean,
I guess so, but I mean, here's the thing, like, I think the whole thing with Jaime shows that she's definitely looking for more than just a hookup, right? I mean, she's the reason why she's a virgin. I mean, she's looking.
I mean, Tormund was. I know that he kind of. And that was another thing that bothered me, that he just kind of like up and left Brienne and like went over to the other girl or whatever. Whoever was sitting on Podrick or whatever.
Right.
Who, Podrick is a smooth man. That's a smooth motherfucker.
Pod knows what he's doing. But you saw where Tormund leaves and he's telling, you know, John's trying to talk him out of it a little bit. Like, yeah. Man, the wildlings are northerners now. Like, basically, there's no reason for the wall, man. You don't have to go back up there. And he's like, no, we're too far south. We don't belong up here.
Is that written convenience? Is that script convenience?
It may be, but it does make sense because the books go about as much into the wildlings as the show does. But it makes sense from a territorial standpoint. But take that for granted. What is Brienne going to go north with Tormund?
Obviously not that point.
But I mean, that's what I'm saying. Like, is that a point? So, like, as much as people wanted to see Tormund and Brienne hooking up, and I'm sure the show could have written it into where she wakes up, there's a hilariously awkward thing of we shouldn't have done this. But, like, I think that a little bit of it was like a love and a lost arc for her. So, like, she's not going north with Tormund. Like, that whole thing doesn't, it's just as silly of a throwaway as people are just as mad about the Jamie Brienne thing.
Let's talk about the Arya scene with Gendry. A lot of great callbacks in that one, in my opinion. If you're a fan of the show, you know Arya's history. You know what her and Ned Stark have talked about. It was just so many callbacks because, you know, the episode they had sex, everybody was talking about Robert Baratheon telling Ned Stark that Stark and a Baratheon are going to, you know, rule, blah, blah, blah. And then everybody finds out this episode that he is a Baratheon and he kind of gets like the side castle or whatever. And then he goes and brags.
Summer home.
Yeah. He goes and brags about to Arya and proposes to Arya. And Arya's like, you know, hey, you know, I'm not a lady. I am not that kind of person. It harkens back to Ned Stark in season one, you know, telling her, you know, you could be a nice lady and you could do this and that, trying to talk her out of the, I think it was out of the sword fighting game or whatever. And she's like, I don't want to be those things. And talk about someone who stayed true to herself throughout the whole series. Throughout the whole series, she has stayed true to who she was as a child. And I thought those scenes with her and Gendry had so many callbacks since the sex and everything that it made you almost think that maybe she is going to be the lady. And then when she said it, and some people may be heartbroken, I'm thinking,
I didn't.
Yeah, okay. I get it.
It makes sense, and I didn't.
It makes total sense.
I didn't believe for a second when they were building the tension up in that scene that she was going to accept. There's no way in hell. And at the beginning of the episode, none of this is obvious, or at the beginning of the series, I should say, excuse me, I had a lot of congestion tonight. Arya's intention for not being a lady, I think, is a little more innocent and tomboyish. Like, I don't fit in with being a lady. I'm more interested in sword fighting, right?
Yeah.
But now that the harsh reality of life has come crashing down, you know, upon her for the last several years, now suddenly she truly is not a lady, quote unquote, like a lady of the court. I mean, she is she's a battle-hardened person who has escaped death several times. But even furthermore, just a side little, you know, a little side note there, a lot of people kept making the reference of someone in the show said at some point that no one can kill the Night King. Well, no one did. That's not exactly true, because when she left the Faceless Men, she wouldn't give the final agreement of, who are you? I am no one. She said, I'm Arya Stark and I'm going back to Winterfell. Like, it's basically like, look, I've learned all this badass stuff, but I'm not going to become this soulless, like, humanless person that the Faceless Men have become. So there is still some humanity left in her, but she's a cold killer type now. She's a lone assassin, cold killer type. She's not going to be a lady of a court, and it doesn't matter who she marries. She would automatically be looked at as a court type lady and not, why is your wife doing all this weird stuff? So yeah. I liked it. I didn't believe for a second she was ever going to say yes. I loved that she joined the Hound on a road trip again. I'm like, yes, hell yes.
There is a theory that the Clegane Bowl is going to end with the Hound killing the Mountain but suffering life-threatening wounds, and basically, he's going to ask Arya to kill him, and then she's going to have to kill him.
Possibly.
Do you like that theory? I like that theory for their storyline, I feel like.
I like that theory for the convenience. I think that's a good little story arc. I really believe the Hound is going to live, and I really have nothing to back that up with other than I really kind of want him to. But I don't know. I have to say, if you'd asked me a couple of years ago, I thought the Clegane Bowl thing was just total bullshit. Now that we're so close.
So close.
I want it to happen so bad, but I don't know. We'll have to see how that works.
Let's move into, here's how the next few subjects are going to go. We're going to go Bran, and then let's go to Sansa, and then we'll go into Jon and Dany.
I want to, yeah, and I briefly.
Do you have something else you want to hit?
Well, yeah, I like that because I want to wrap up with how the show ended. Or I'm sorry, how this last episode ended.
Right.
I do want to quickly go through Bran, Sansa, and you know, Jon and Dany. So let's start with Bran.
Yeah. Let's talk about him. He's a fucking creeper, first off.
Yeah.
And can we talk about.
But he's not Bran.
Yeah, yeah. Well, right. He's I mean, Bran's the Raven, body, the three-eyed Raven, or whatever Bran. You want to call him. He became the odds-on favorite to sit in a throne by Vegas. There's no way this guy's sitting in a throne, right? I mean, beside the obvious logistics of the wheelchair and all that, trying to get to the throne and really no one to carry him up into the throne, literally and figuratively, he's not the Iron Throne guy.
I don't like that idea because it just, I don't know why, it just doesn't sit well with me.
Yeah.
I could see where in some kind of morbid, dark type ending that he ends up ruling and his entire family is gone. And now he's just this shell of Bran that is the three-eyed Raven, but he's, I don't know. It just doesn't, it doesn't seem to work. It seems a little messy for me, but this show does have a history of just doing things that you don't expect. And this episode did do a couple of those. So I don't know. I wouldn't completely rule it out, but I don't know about odds on favorite.
Yeah. Well, and that's what was weird because it just came out today that Vegas said that. Let's talk about the scene where Jon and Sansa and Arya are at the tree or whatever. Were they at the tree? Is that where it was?
Yeah, that's where the secret was.
And, you know, Jon's like tiptoeing around the whole subject that he fucked his aunt. And then he goes, Bran's like, if you want to tell them, you can tell them. And then Jon goes, you know, later after back and forth, tell them. I mean, the meme is that, he, you know, Jon's like, tell them the secret. And Bran's like, yeah, he fucked his aunt. I mean, like, how do you, I mean, they shied
damn
away.
It, Bran.
Yeah, they shied away from the whole scene, which took away from a little bit from the storytelling, the gravitas of the scene, of how the weight should have impacted and everything. But is that the guy, like, of all characters, every character dead or alive, okay, is three-eyed Raven Bran the guy that you want to deliver that news?
I think so, because I think for storytelling purposes it makes sense, because who are the two people that he knows the most other than his siblings that know that he's not the same person anymore? So like his whole thing about being the three-eyed Raven, and it's obvious that he's not Bran, there's something of a higher power going on. I think he is the right person to say that, because without a doubt, he's not lying.
Okay, so you're taking it from the aspect that he's the three-eyed Raven. He knows this is fact.
You're hearing it from the mouth of a god.
Yeah, so basically, he's like the guy that witnessed the murder, and you're saying, here
you go.
It's
like you're debating something with your buddy, and you're like, well, I'm going to ask Google.
Yeah,
you know,
right.
Just whip out the phone. Oh, well, Google just said you're wrong.
Gotcha. I just could not imagine the way it was presented to the Stark sisters about the whole, I guess the human aspect of it.
Sure, and I think the whole reason why that is not shown with them actually being told is to sell the weight more of Sansa immediately just turning around and betraying his confidence. Now, this is where I will buy in to the theory of the writers are just not writing women correctly, because they have made Sansa so vindictive and bitchy for kind of no reason the last few episodes.
Yeah, I kind of understand her motive of bitchiness.
Sure.
Just because she feels threatened.
Sure.
But she's, it's really weird. Like, when you look at it from I'm a guy that hated Sansa. I always hated Sansa. And
I was never a big fan of her character.
And I was all in on Dany. So
I'm also not a big fan of the actress.
Right. That was another thing that played into it. So the cross-section of me liking Dany at the beginning of the show and me hating Sansa is coming very close in these junctures and leading up to it, because Sansa has proven to be not physically empowering, but she's mentally empowering. Like, she is playing the game and she's looking at it from a lot of different angles. And then Dany is looking at it from a strength, perception of emotion, all this. It's hard to explain without coming off like a Sansa, pro Sansa and anti Dany, but I get that she feels threatened, and I get that the things that she brings up that she does not like that Dany is doing strategically make a lot of sense. She doesn't like that she's having to move so quick with the tired and the hungry soldiers to go on down to Cersei, who's, we can get into that later. But I also get the fact that, okay, bitch, put it aside. I mean, for the common good. So I'm at that weird level where I agree with everybody and disagree with everybody.
Well, and I get my issue with her in this last episode was the one line that she delivered to Jaime, which ended up, getting him kind of to snap into or out of reality, whatever it was, for him to leave, to where she gets news, Sansa gets news, that that Dany has lost one of the dragons,
how are they getting all this news so quick? And how are they getting logistics flown out the window?
Book, unless I'm mistaken, the book doesn't really reference it, other than just to bring up. Obviously, they use ravens to send messages. Yeah. I don't remember if the book kind of references that the ravens have some kind of magical makeup, basically to somehow fly faster, whatever the fuck it is. But obviously they're using birds to communicate, but still, no, I agree with you. I mean, it's like they're speeding up the flow of information and how quickly people get places for convenience, and not really doing a good job of continuity to show how people get there. But at the same time, when she gets the news that Dany has lost a dragon and that the small fleet they had was just utterly destroyed by Euron, her reaction is not one of like rage and what are we going to do, and that's devastating news. It's to make kind of a bitchy, pithy comment to Jaime of, I really want to see your sister pay for it. Really? What about the news that you're probably going to lose your brother now?
Yeah.
And that all these people that you just spent time with and these soldiers that just gave their lives, now a lot of them have just been murdered and the rest of them are probably just a day away from getting killed themselves. And your only reaction is to have a bitchy, like, high school lunchroom argument reaction of, I want to see your sister eat it. It's like, okay, well, that did bug me. And that, I thought that was a poor writing choice. And speaking of poor writing choices, I want to roll right into hit one quick thing and then roll right into the end of the episode, because this is my absolute biggest problem with this episode and to date with how the season's gone. First off, I really didn't like the plot armor, the convenience of the plot armor that the dragons have. If somebody's riding one of the dragons, they can't die. But the second someone's not riding a dragon, they're vulnerable as shit.
Right.
So with complete pinpoint, like tomahawk accuracy, Euron takes down this dragon. A great death scene, by the way.
Right.
Utterly devastating, like typical Game of Thrones, like very surprising, quick hit. You don't know what's coming.
Yeah, because Dany was like flying through the air. She was happy. It was like How to Train Your Dragon up there.
Right.
I mean, she was smiling. I mean, and
She's up 10, 15,000 feet.
Yeah.
And that dragon takes a bolt through the neck. Great death scene. But she gets pissed off. She turns around and faces the fleet and flies right at him.
Yeah.
And doesn't get hit by a single fucking bolt.
And can we talk about the fact that she refused to use the fire? Like, dragons breathe fire, right? I mean, why is she not using it?
Explosive. Like, we have seen multiple times throughout the seasons that it is explosive. Like, when the fire hits, it's like ripping the ground up like it's some kind of crazy tornado or something. So I completely agree with you. Plot armor convenience of her flying right at the fleet and nobody hits her with a bolt. She still turns around and flies off and nobody can still hit her now. But then they turn right around and they're using the same bolts and they take out all the ships in like a matter of 30 seconds.
Yeah. It was a ridiculous scene for me on many levels, especially when the dragon started getting hit. Especially because she has the vantage point. shouldn't she have been able to see Euron's, you know, fleet?
And so I'm going to take it a step further. All the boats are destroyed. The majority of the survivors swim to shore at Dragonstone. They have no weapons. They have a single dragon that can breathe fire. Euron's got them outnumbered like 20 to 1. Why are we not storming beaches? How are we not shooting them in the water?
Why is Cersei not doing the same thing?
How are we not shooting them in the water? Like, if you've rendered the dragon useless because they can't get near the boats because of the scorpion crossbow things, then I don't understand how they didn't pick apart the rest of their forces in the water. How did they not storm the beaches? How did they not end it right there on Dragonstone? And then that leads right into by far the stupidest scene. I think the stupidest scene I've seen this show do.
I have to agree. This episode had a lot of stupidity for me. And I'm a guy who didn't mind the Dothraki army, you know, in the Battle of Winterfell just going off. There's a lot of things I can make excuses for in my head that says, okay, well, I can see why they would do that. And other people would say, well, I don't know why they did that. Well, it's because I see that Dany and Jon throughout the whole series, they're not very good strategists.
No.
And it really shows right here, but this is maybe
no strategic aptitude.
This may be even too dumb for them. And this is really dumb on Cersei's part.
It's too dumb for the average person who thinks about the whole reason why you would want to go. You don't even have to be good at negotiating, just realizing that you're walking into what should be a trap.
Right. And we'll go to break real quick, and then we'll come back and talk about it. And we're back.
So, the episode ends with Dany showing up with Grey Worm, a small contingent of the Unsullied. The dragon sitting off in the distance, approaching the outer gate of King's Landing to negotiate for...
Which was totally ineffective for him to even be out there.
Yeah. What is the girl's name that...
Missandei.
Yeah, we're gonna go with that. I think you're correct, but I'm just too lazy to look it up. So, Missandei has been taken prisoner,
right.
Which she was plucked out of the water somehow, I guess. But again... Yeah. We didn't rip the force apart in the water, but she got kidnapped, fine. However, she ended up there. She's standing up there. The threat is, unless Dany gives her unconditional surrender, Missandei's going to die, which is kind of a silly plot device anyway, because if she surrenders, what, she's just going to let Missandei go and then let them leave? GTFO. So Missandei's standing up there. She's terrified. She's bound. It looks like it's about to go down. The creepy doctor, which I can't think of his name, walks out.
I don't remember his name either, but I know Dryden or something like that.
Just totally. There's people listening to this right now like, oh, you fucking idiots. But anyways, the no, that's not it. Anyway, I don't give a shit. So he walks out to negotiate with Tyrion.
Yeah.
Tyrion and them are having a terse discussion, and then Tyrion decides, I'm going to walk right up to the gate and plead to my sister directly. At some point, Cersei looks like she might give in. Everybody knows she's not going to. Anyways, you all saw the scene. The scene opens up with about 17 to 20 of these giant scorpion crossbows with their arrows pointed right at the dragon, well within the range of what they put one through the neck of this other dragon not 20 minutes before. The contingent of Unsullied is maybe 100 people, close-knit, tightly surrounded by Dany, and the crossbows that are not focused on the dragon are focused on them. She's standing in the middle of seething, right next to Grey Worm, who is seething. Tyrion is up next to the gate negotiating. They're in a kill box! They're standing in a perfect position for all of those crossbows to open up and wipe them out immediately.
And that's one of the things is, why is Dany's crew going straight to King's Landing without the myriads of reinforcements from the North? Like, it makes no sense unless this was the North's plan all along, was to let them two battle it out and hopefully the dragons take out a few and then they come out and then the North comes in, takes over the whole thing. But from a... I can't put that much faith into Jon Snow to have that kind of cunning to make that move and come in the back door what's all happening. This scene did not play to It played to the stupidity of John and Danny, right? It really played to that they're idiots. But it did not play to what Cersei has really done throughout the whole thing, is while she is a rage monster, she is strategically sound.
Well, she's strategic
and ruthless.
She's strategically sound from a ruthless, I absolutely do not give a shit who dies by carrying out my plans. And so the scene and the episode ends with Missandei losing her head.
Yep.
Which, okay, so if you're negotiating and the chess piece is lost, there is absolutely no reason for the person who just committed that crime to keep any more of their bargain, and Tyrion turns his back and slowly walks away.
Right.
I fully expected, I was actually desperate for the show to open fire and kill everyone in that field, because it's the only thing that made sense for that scene. And yet,
I agree.
Presumably, Cersei just lets them walk away because the episode fades to black. I up until this point, I have really defended this show against the allegations of lazy writing. I can't for that one.
Right.
I was cool with the episode up until the part with right after where the dragon, the green one, dies, and then the plot armor kicked in. From that point on till the very end of the episode when the credits rolled, I was pretty disgusted with it.
Yeah, I had more problems with the strategic element of this whole show, or the strategic elements of this season, in this episode. I thought this episode lacked it. I thought it lacked cunning. I thought it lacked what certain characters would actually do. I'm not so certain that Tyrion would have walked up there. And even if he did, Cersei, I think, still would have killed him on his way, walk up or walk back.
Yeah,
and
I was waiting for him to take an arrow to the chest.
Yeah, I really thought that when he said the thing about the kid and her kid, he was done for. Because
yeah.
He served his purpose, right? I mean,
he absolutely served his purpose.
He effectively killed Cersei's only ally, or you would think if Euron is that smart, I mean, surely he is, and took that off the board, fucked his sister into losing that part of the army, and it should be done. And I don't get it. I don't get the what is it? I never pronounce his name correctly. The eunuch.
Varys. Yeah.
Varys going for Jon Snow makes sense, but really, I think Varys should have been pushing Sansa if he wanted to get Tyrion on his side to get Dany away.
Well, I think that there's a scene, and to me, one of the actual very good parts of the show and why I thought Tyrion was going to eat it is because Varys makes a comment to Tyrion when the scene opens of, you're drinking a lot. And Tyrion just kind of gives him this look like, I mean, well, really, what else am I going to do? I've survived death how many times? So anyways, Tyrion basically says, at some point, do you stop serving the system and realize, like, you have the right person who could be the ruler and she's it? What I really like about Varys' character, and I'm so glad that the show has not gone out of their way to ruin him, is that he truly is a political operative. He is there. His intentions are to serve the system, and they're not necessarily evil. They're just skeevy.
Yeah.
Like, Littlefinger's intentions went to self-serving and evil, and that's where he lost it, and I think that's why the show ended up killing him, and I thought it was a very good way for him to leave the show. But Varys has not done that. The only time that he's done something personally serving is when he found the guy who cut his balls off and he killed him. Really, that's the only thing in the show that he's done that's been self-serving for his interest. Everything else has been for the good of the kingdom. And I think that he sees that Dany has flipped and is really heading towards the very typical, like, unhinged Targaryen, I'll burn anybody in my path. Like,
yeah.
And the end of that episode, as stupid as the last 20 minutes were, the end of that episode really showed that uncontrollable rage on her face that I think is going to lead to why I don't think she survives and why I think ultimately John's going to end up having to take her out, because he's going to come to the realization of, damn, like, I'm this is my Jaime Lannister moment. Like, I can't let her rule. She's got to go. But So I was okay with the whole premise behind what Varys did, but I was so, again, turned off. From the moment the dragon died and then the plot armor kicked on for the dragon she was riding, I was not okay with it.
So let me ask you a question.
Sure.
Who did you have sitting on the Iron Throne last week?
Oh, man, what did I say? I mean, I made the joke about Hot Pie, but I think I believe I went with Jon.
Do you still think it's Jon?
It's Jon, but how did I phrase it? I think I said it's Jon, but it's dark.
Yeah, like he had to go through.
He had to kill Dany, and I think he's lost something else.
Do you think it's still that?
Arya or something. I do. I'm sticking with that. Actually, I've got more confidence now that it's going to be Jon with Tyrion at his side, because if she didn't kill Tyrion at the gate, I think he just earned himself a pass to the end of the show.
Yeah. I am going to go with, I think, I'm going to change. And I don't like it because it's so predictable, but I really do think at this point it's going to be Jon. If it's not going to be Sansa, it's going to be Jon.
Yeah,
I think it's just it's too predictable for my taste, but I think I'm okay with I'm accepting of the predictable.
But the problem is that for a show that's been so unpredictable for so long, and I've loved it for that, this last episode really left a bad taste in my mouth about kind of doing the predictable thing. Like it almost the end of
I think that's what it was. And that's a good point.
I guess let me kind of say it like this. I didn't like the end of that episode because it ended like a network TV episode.
It did.
Of like an NCIS or a CSI, to where you know the characters, the main characters in the show, are never going to die. They're never going to kill their bread and butter. So there's really no tension there.
Yeah.
And realize, once I realized that no one was going to die in that scene, they were going to roll their credits, I was like, oh my God, are you serious? So it almost went back towards the level of predictable, which is why I'm sticking with Jon, because I really think they are going to end the show that way.
Well, that's fortunate, but that's really... Do you have anything else?
The last thing I want to hit on, switching gears away from Game of Thrones real quick and just kind of reference a quick show. We're not going to discuss the episode because you haven't watched it, but I at least want to give a little bit of the premise real quick and we'll roll off of it.
Oh, yeah.
The show Chernobyl on HBO. I don't know the average age of our listener out there. I am 37. I was born in 1982. Chernobyl happened in 1986. I was almost five when it happened. So it was one of my first memories of having people watch something on TV where they were horrified. Right after that was the Challenger exploding. Yeah. But anyways, where I'm going with this is that Chernobyl was a very big catalyst in nuclear power going from being an accepted as a safe form of like electricity to people were terrified of it. And this show, the opening episode, does an excellent, excellent job of explaining why it was so horrific. If you are any kind of fan of psychological thrillers or horrors, this show, rooted in truth, is right up your alley. It truly is a terrifying and engrossing look at that accident. The opening episode is up on HBO now. Check it out. You'll absolutely love it.
Well, that is it for our little pop culture talk about Game of Thrones. I'm excited. I'm actually going to watch Chernobyl probably tonight.
Oh, it's good. Very good.
If I have some time. Other than that, you can follow us on at FWordsPod on Twitter.
That's it.
We have at Mr. Lebowski if you want to follow me. Mr. Lebowski. We have pinned to our profile page a Google poll. Go take the poll questions. The survey will really take you about 2 to 4 minutes. It won't take you long. It's just, you know, for us to try to make the show better and try to figure it out. And
do us a favor there.
Yeah. Other than that, this is Football and Other F Words, and you've just been F'd.
I think it's you've just been G-O-T'd.
You've been G-O-T'd GTFO.